Hello, this is your Polycast for Tuesday, November 24th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, violence breaks out at the Black Lives Matter protest. Five people are injured. Governor Dayton says video of the Clark shooting is inconclusive. Five people were shot and wounded after a confrontation among people gathered at a protest outside the Minneapolis Police 4th Precinct Station. Police are searching for three white suspects as the incident is ratcheting up tensions again, 9 days after officers shot a young black man to death nearby. Tim Nelson has more.
The incident happened about 10:40 last night near the intersection of 14th Avenue North and Morgan Avenue.
Shots. Hope those north or south of the precinct here because of the echo.
That's a police officer at the scene of the Jamar Clark protests reporting the gunfire just a few hundred yards from the 4th Precinct Station and dozens of protesters gathered in front of it. It followed a tense night on Plymouth Avenue after demonstrators reported a confrontation with some men in their midst, some of them reportedly wearing masks. Some said they'd made racist remarks to the crowd, and others said they'd suspected the men were carrying firebombs or other weapons. Dana Janert said she saw the incident start.
And I saw at least three white guys, and one of them got punched in the face by the crowd because, I mean, they were threatening everybody, and then they were chasing them out. And when they were chasing him out, the one guy had fallen on the ground because he got punched, and so the crowd kind of stopped, and I saw them all stop, and they started running up here, and a couple guys were following him out.
The pursuit reached the 1400 block of Morgan Avenue, just two streets north of the police station. Gia Ronsky-Riley was among the protesters following the men leaving the scene.
Then it was like they turned around, and then they just like started shooting. And at first, I wasn't sure. Like, I was like, are they shooting firecrackers? Because it was so loud, and it was like all this like sulfur, whatever. And then it was like the person like right next to me on my left went down. The person on my right went down, and I was like, they're actually shooting at us. They're shooting bullets at us.
Witnesses reported four or five shots at least. A dispatcher told officers on the radio that a detector had counted eight. Five people were hit by gunfire. One of them was shot in the leg. Jason Morris tried to help.
And then another brother, he got shot in his stomach. We applying pressure. He out there with no shirt on the cold ground. I'm trying to get him warm.
And witnesses said the trouble kept up even after the suspects fled and help started to arrive. Rachel Bean said she was applying pressure on one of the gunshot wounds.
Police arrived a few minutes later, tried to move everybody off the scene, including macing a bunch of people in their faces to try and get them to move out of the space.
Three of the wounded were taken by bystanders to North Memorial Medical Center in Robbinsdale. Two others were taken by ambulance to Hennepin County Medical Center. It wasn't clear what wounds the others had suffered, although Minneapolis police said they did not believe the injuries to be life-threatening. No suspects were arrested, although organizers of the now 9-day protest said they'd seen indications online and nearby that outside agitators were threatening violence. Nakima Levy-Pounds is head of the Minneapolis NAACP.
I know that for the last several days, white supremacist groups have been threatening to come here and threatening to try to rile up protesters by throwing rocks and Molotov cocktails. And some said that they would be armed. And so we've tried to take precautions by looking for people who look suspicious. And tonight they actually acted upon their threats.
There was no way to corroborate that. Police said only that they were looking for three suspects described only as white men. The shooting provoked anger and fear among the protesters left in front of the police precinct. Misha Grimm is one of the organizers of the Black Lives Matter Minneapolis protests in the wake of the Clark shooting and said the incident only reinforces the need to demonstrate.
When people come with violence to a peaceful protest, it proves the need for the protest. We're out here because people gun down people of color on a regular basis and nothing ever happens. We literally are just asking for a fair trial, and because of that, we were shot at.
Protesters have called for a march today in North Minneapolis at 2 p.m. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
Governor Mark Dayton said this morning that last night's shooting of protesters is a cowardly criminal act. Dayton said on NPR News that he hopes the suspects are found and brought to justice. He noted that up until last night, the protest over the police shooting of Jamar Clark had been relatively peaceful.
It does underscore how, you know, treacherous a situation is when a lot of people are milling around, and I greatly appreciate Mr. Clark's brother, Mr. Eddie Sutton, for making a statement he did this morning that this is another reason for the termination of the public protest.
Dayton said he doesn't fault law enforcement officers for their handling of the protest. He also expressed confidence in state and federal investigators who are working on the Clark case. And yesterday, the governor told reporters that he's seen video from a camera in an ambulance that was on site when Jamar Clark was shot. He said he believes it doesn't provide any conclusive proof of what happened. Dayton said he described the tape to Clark's family, but he still doesn't want it made public while federal authorities investigate the shooting. Tim Pugmire has more.
Some witnesses claim Clark was handcuffed when he was shot by police on November 15th. The head of the Minneapolis Police Union claims Clark was shot after going for an officer's gun, and police have said from the beginning that Clark was not handcuffed. Dayton said the videotape he watched Friday does not confirm either side's account of what happened.
Cameras looking out the back door of the ambulance is for the purpose of photographing what's occurring, what would occur in the ambulance, in the back of the ambulance. And there's just a very brief fragment where Mr. Clark and one of the officers are encountered each other, and then they disappear from sight, and there's no other view of them until one of the officers after, and there's no audio, but it would appear after the shot was fired, one of the officers comes back into the camera view.
Dayton shared a similar description with Clark's family. They had a private meeting Saturday along with Congressman Keith Ellison and leaders of the group Black Lives Matter.
I told them, and I said, I give you my oath on my word of honor. There's nothing in there that's going to provide any confirmation for this view that the officers, you know, acted as some alleged they did.
Dayton said he won't release the tape until it no longer jeopardizes the U.S. Department of Justice investigation of the shooting. The head of the Justice Department's Civil Rights Division said a release of tapes would be extremely detrimental to the investigation. Nakima Levy-Pounds, president of the Minneapolis chapter of the NAACP, is among those calling for the release of all tapes held by authorities. Levy Pound said she thinks Dayton went too far in talking about one of those tapes and calling it inconclusive.
If the whole reason that the tape is not being released to the public is because it would impede the investigation or cause people to draw conclusions one way or the other, the governor's statement could be perceived in a similar way as potentially shaping public opinion surrounding this issue.
Levy Pound said people are demanding justice and an explanation of what happened. She said Dayton's comments don't help address those concerns. Former U.S. Attorney Tom Heffelfinger said releasing evidence in a piecemeal fashion does a disservice to any investigation.
There are multiple, perhaps multiple sources for video evidence. Therefore, releasing an opinion about one or more of those pieces may be premature.
Dayton strongly defended his access to the tape. He also dismissed any suggestion that his viewing could taint the investigation.
In a situation like that, we're teetering on the brink of a very, very volatile situation. Then I want to know everything I possibly can, need to know, to make the best informed decision I possibly can to protect public safety. And that's what I did.
Dayton said it's ultimately his decision whether to release the tape, which is in the possession of the State Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. He said he hopes federal investigators complete their work in a timely fashion. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News.
In some other news, a federal judge in St. Paul has rejected a request from the state of Minnesota to delay major changes to the state's sex offender program. Matt Sepik reports.
In June, Judge Donovan Frank declared Minnesota's civil commitment system for sex offenders unconstitutional. Then last month, he ordered independent risk assessments for all of the more than 700 people in the program to figure out who could be put on a path to release or placed in less restrictive settings. The state asked the judge to stay that order pending an appeal, but Frank denied the request. He'd initially given the state 30 days to complete the first round of reassessments and 60 days to come up with a plan for reevaluating everybody else, but in this latest order, he reset those deadlines, so the clock started running yesterday. The state can still ask an appeals court for a stay. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Congressman Rick Nolan says he will introduce a bill to ban foreign steel imports, a move designed to help the state's reeling iron ore mining industry. Dan Crocker has more.
Nolan's announcement follows news last week that two more iron ore mines and plants in northern Minnesota will temporarily close. About 1,500 Minnesota mine workers have now been laid off over the past year. The 8th District Democrat says a flood of cheap, possibly illegally imported steel is to blame.
The mining and steel industry in this country is on the verge of collapse.
Nolan says he's also asking for a meeting with President Obama, along with Minnesota Senators Klobuchar and Franken and Governor Dayton. Nolan says they will ask the president to use his executive authority to block steel imports. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.